It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. It's No Filter Friday. We've got a great lineup for you today. But first, a call to action. The November 5th election, as you know, is fast approaching. And the Jefferson Parish Clerk of Court's office, they're anticipating a shortage of poll commissioners in Jefferson Parish and hope that a good number of you, the citizens, will help them address this pressing problem by becoming poll commissioners. For information on how to qualify, go online to www.jpclerkofcourt.us. Click Jefferson Parish Clerk of Court. A pop-up screen will appear with the dates, times, and locations of instructional sessions. Completion of only one two-hour session is required for certification. The commissioner course can be taken online. Information about the online course is on the Clerk of Court's website pop-up screen as well. And one may choose to just simply call the clerk's election office for information and guidance. And that number is 504-736-6394. John Gegenheimer, the Clerk of Court, puts out that call to action. If you really want to give back to your community, no better way than to serve as a poll commissioner on November 5th. Got a great lineup. We're going to visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll get his review of the first interview of Vice President Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, the governor from Minnesota, as to how they did with Dana Bash last night on CNN. At 12 o'clock, we'll have Romina Bhatia, director of budget and entitlement policy at the Cato. She's celebrating her two-year anniversary. She's been talking a lot about addressing the U.S. debt crisis, and she'll provide reflections and progress one way or the other as to where we are on that. We know we're north of $35 trillion at the present time. That will be a very interesting conversation for sure. Chris Blair joins us because you're Fighting Tigers, and Chris is the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. We'll be taking on the University of Southern Cal Trojans in Las Vegas Sunday evening. That is something you're definitely going to want to see and hear for sure right here on WWL. We'll talk to Chris Blair about that big game coming your way this weekend. In the 11 o'clock hour of the St. Tammany Economic Show with Chris Massengill, and we'll talk, he's with the St. Tammany Corporation. And we'll talk about a number of initiatives that are working their way out in St. Tammany as it relates to economic development. So we look forward to hearing from our neighbors on the North Shore that are very critical to our local economy here as well. Jennifer Van Ranken, Councilwoman at Large. We had the parish president on yesterday, Cynthia Lee Shang, about this controversy relative to bus advertising. There was a call to action put out by Jennifer Van Ranken to a number of organizations throughout Jefferson Parish saying that something wasn't right with this process. And we'll get to the bottom of what she was talking about. So the must much anticipated, excuse me, interview takes place last evening. It was okay, in my view. Nothing remarkable. I didn't expect that there was going to be a lot of juice provided by either the VP or the governor. And so they did not exceed my expectations. And in fact, they probably were spot on because they said much about nothing, quite frankly. And Dana Bash really, I don't think, pushed the issues and didn't seem to be prepared with follow-up facts to some of the answers that were being provided by these two that were well-known, well-publicized. They should have anticipated what their answers were going to be. But it was just kind of interesting right out of the box. You couldn't have had a more straightforward question, you know, talking about what would you do on day one in the White House? And the vice president went off on day one, and I'll just read it. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I will tell you first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at the aspirations, the goals, and the ambitions of the American people, I think that people are ready for a new way forward in a way that generations of Americans have been fueled by hope and by optimism. I think, sadly, in the last decade, we have had in the former president someone who has really been pushing an agenda and an environment that is about diminishing the character and the strength of who we are as Americans, really dividing our nation, and I think people are ready to turn the page on that. So what does that mean that she's doing on day one? She's going to save the middle class on day one by looking at their aspirations, their goals, and their ambitions? She doesn't know that already? She's been in office for almost 4 years. You know, when we think about this, it's amazing how we embrace Joe Biden when there's a positive outcome and we separate ourselves when it's a negative outcome. We are in the game of formulating policy when it works to their advantage. When they don't have the appropriate answer, we separate ourselves from being a policymaker under the Biden-Harris administration. So this is day one. I guess she's going to think about how she will support and strengthen the middle class. She had actually gone on to say that she has given some examples already of what that is going to be implementing her plan for what she calls an opportunity economy. I'm a little bit at a loss as to what that is and what she's actually talking about, but it was interesting nonetheless. What was even more interesting than that is when she was confronted with the flip-flopping on any number of issues. She came out in 2019, said she was opposed to fracking. Now she's not opposed to fracking. She came out in 2019 and said illegal migrant detention centers, they're out, and we need to decriminalize the border. And therefore, there should not be criminal sanctions for those that cross the border. And, you know, and this whole thing has to be reformulated at the border. And now she's saying, because of her work as a prosecutor in a border state of California as the AG, that she dealt with transnational gangs, human trafficking, and all of that, all of which has been very alive and well and robust during the first 3.5 years of this administration. But yet, crickets, nothing. She's talked about some improvements that have been made relative to the migration at the border. But what she doesn't say is that basically they gave them more opportunities to come into this country in a way that would be more receptive to them, and they wouldn't have to cross between the legal ways to come into this country at the border gates. Didn't talk about it at all. We've talked about it on this show. The most recent CHNV policy, flying people in from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela, you know, other policies as well, where you can fill out on an app and they give you a number and you can just go to the port of entry and come into the country. No problem. So, I mean, they did a great job of taking whatever the illegal crossings were and swimming across the Rio Grande and just moving it to the port of entry, where no one can get a video of anything that's going on there, because it's not out of the ordinary to have lines that are miles long going back and forth across the border, the ports of entry. That's what they did, quite frankly. I mean, that's pretty much all they did. And it's interesting that while all of this is going on, the Biden-Harris administration just announced yesterday, I believe, or on the 28th, 2 days ago, that they're going to hand out another $380 million through FEMA's Shelter and Services Program to communities across the country that are providing shelter, care, and other services to illegal migrants and other foreign nationals that have recently been released from federal custody. And this is what the Department of Homeland Security is saying. This is what they're doing, verbatim. And yet, they're talking about the improvements that they're being made. And the reason they're doing this now is that in the last days of this election process, they're trying to shut the Democrat governors and mayors up because their communities are boiling over. They're frustrated. They're angry. And they're trying to placate this and throwing money out there because in many respects, some of them are going broke. They don't have the money to continue to do this. They're closing shelters. These folks are ending up back out on the streets. They're walking in neighborhoods. You've seen the stories. You see the videos. It is a mess. And yet, during the course of this interview, you would swear that all good's on the southern front. No big issue at all. Interestingly, she says, my policy positions have changed, but not my value. So let's just talk about climate change. Let's just talk about fracking. She's now says that she supports fracking, right? What we've heard for years from the climate activists and a number of the progressives in the Democratic Party and both embrace in embracing a lot of the green agenda is that all of the negative things about fracking and what it causes to our climate. Last night, she said, because her values have not changed, she still embraces the climate agenda of her party, that she now believes that they can be successful in the implementation of that climate agenda and fracking can still go on. So now we've embraced the fossil fuel industry, I'm assuming, because if fracking's good, I got to imagine drilling's good, right? Natural gas production, that would be good. LNG would be good, because all of this can go on because her value system dictates that she still embraces this climate agenda. But how does this work out graphically? So on the one hand, we're spending money to improve the climate in whatever ways, I guess, available, in stimulating this or stimulating that and providing incentives for solar, for wind, for alternative energy sources. And we are quantifying the gains that we are making in the emission releases and the gas releases in the climate. And all of this other stuff on the fossil fuel industry that they say is bad, 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 and they've quantified how bad it is for so many years. How does that work? We can do all of this. We've made the gains over here, but doesn't that decrease and diminish the gains that are being made? Right? Doesn't that make sense? And in the end, have we figured out mathematically, or is there a quantifiable number as to where we end up at the end of every 5-year, 10-year period of doing all these activities that they've been for years talking about has to be eliminated in order to be able to reach these goals that we've set, right? And that we hope to achieve. Now, all of this can happen at the same time. Strange. Especially in light of the backdrop that so many of these folks have talked about, how the end of the world was coming our way. We were going to lose everything. And it's amazing how all of that goes away and no one challenges these folks to provide a quantification of what this means. We can embrace fossil fuels still, moving forward, still do the climate thing, and that will not disrupt their progressive ideology, their ideology around climate at all. And we just wave that magic wand. Since Biden got out of the race, Kamala gets in the race, and it's all good now. It's amazing. I am really shocked and surprised that Joe Biden didn't embrace Kamala Harris in a much bigger way. Because this wand that she holds, where all of this can happen at the same time, right? Where Republicans have been saying all along that we can do all of the above. We can do all of these things at the same time. The opponents have said that's not going to work. You're wrong. You're anti-climate. You're this. In the stroke, in the wave of a wand, the whole thing has shifted and changed. And nobody asks a question. No one asks a follow-up question. How does this work? This runs completely contrary to everything you have embraced. Not to mention the fact that you were the author of some of these very provisions that are in place as it relates to the climate agenda that has all kinds of language that runs contrary to what you're saying today. And yet no one says anything about it and follows it up. Interesting, too, Daniel Dale, you've seen him on CNN, right? He's the fact-checking guy, the black-rimmed glasses, short hair. So he fact-checked what Kamala Harris said about her position on fracking. And he says the following. He says, there is no question that what she said in 2019, and this is the quote, and he provides it, there's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. Fracking, as you know, is a pretty big issue, particularly in your must-win state of Pennsylvania. Do you still ban fracking? That's the question from Bash to Harris. All right. And Harris says no. And I made that clear on the debate stage in 2020 that I would not ban fracking as vice president. I did not ban fracking as the vice president. And as president, I will not ban fracking. Well, you can't ban fracking as the vice president. So I don't know why you're even throwing out that comment. So the fact checked is basically this, is that he says that in same thing in 2019, she said she took the position in December of 2019 that she was against fracking. Ultimately, in a debate with Mike Pence, what she did was she was speaking on behalf of Joe Biden and shared what Joe Biden's stance was on the issue, but never, ever articulated where she was on the issue. Because in 2019, when she was running against Joe Biden, who was then a racist, right, and called him out for being that as well, he also was not, the person that he needed to be as it related to climate. And that's when she said at a climate function that she is absolutely, let me be clear about this, I am opposed or I favor a ban on fracking. But understand, her value system now is the same. So her value system about climate and things that have to happen is, I would assume, is against fracking. Her policy, though, now, conveniently, is that she is not. And a lot of people are scratching their heads trying to figure out how they're going to square this up. And I don't know that they can. I mean, it's some really good wordsmithing at its best, because they don't have really an appropriate answer to the question. Not too terribly different than Tim Walz on his mischaracterization and his out-and-out lies about what he's accomplished, whether he was Teacher of the Year in Minnesota, whether he got the Chamber of Commerce Award of the Year in Nebraska, or what actually was the breadth and depth of his military service. Because he doesn't answer the question at all either. Basically, he says he spent 25 years in the Army and he hunts. He's proud of his record. You know, he said he was in the military for 24 years of wearing the uniform. We thank him for saying. But why would you say what you said about, you know, the guns utilized in war that you carried in war when it didn't happen? He just went around and said, my record speaks for itself. I think people are coming to get to know me. I speak like they do. I speak candidly. And then he offered the excuse. I wear my emotions on my sleeves, and I speak especially passionately about our children being shot in schools and around guns. So I think people know me. They know who I am. They know where my heart is. And again, my record has been out there for over 40 years to speak for itself. So this is a huge caution for you, me, and everyone else when we're evaluating what's actually going on with Tim Walz. If he is passionate about something, passionate about a topic, you may want to look at what he's saying a little jaded, because he wears his emotions on his sleeves. Now, I don't know about you. I've been to a lot of leadership classes. This is not a great quality or characteristic of a good leader. You're not wearing your emotions on your sleeves. And there's an appropriate way to articulate something that you feel passionately about in order to motivate those around you. So I guess he was giving us a warning. If he's emotional about this or passionate about it, look out. He's liable to say anything. And we just have to accept the excuse that he's passionate about it. And then when the one time that Dana Bash really did follow up and push on this individual about this answer, he pointed out that his wife is an English teacher and his grammar is not always correct. You have got to be kidding me. Much to do about nothing. We did not learn a whole lot last evening, other than really one definitive fact that was revealed, was that she got a call from the president on a Sunday where he said to her that he was no longer running. We'll be right back. We're going to visit with Jennifer Van Ranken, Jefferson Parish at-large council member, on the bus advertising controversy. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network.
Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Welcome back, folks. There's been a brewing controversy over bus advertising in Jefferson Parish. And recently, our guest, Jennifer Van Ranken, councilwoman at large, reached out to a number of community groups saying that there was something wrong with the process. The fix was in. The taxpayers were going to pay the price. And that there was the process was rotten in many ways. And the administration feels otherwise, and we had Cynthia Lee Shang, the parish president, on the show yesterday, and I promised to have Jennifer on today. And Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Noel, and I appreciate it. I listened to our parish president yesterday, and first and foremost to me, let me just say I respect our parish president. I've voted for her every time. I've worked with her, and I respect all of my council colleagues. But still, I'm really concerned about the process I just saw unfold. I think it's off track, and I think we need to all work together to fix it.
So you say that the fix was in, that this is not a fair deal, that there was a poison pill, and yes, there were a lot of things that were going on. The interesting thing about this, and I was looking at the series of events, is that you brought forward a motion to the council to grant the contract to Fuel, and you received a unanimous vote in favor of your resolution. So at that point, everything was hunky-dory?
No. So, look, you're intelligent. Your listeners are intelligent. Let me just quickly walk you through the process, and then you tell me if you see anything to be concerned about. So this process started not from our office, but from the transit department and the administration. They put out a public request for companies to do our bus advertising and bring us revenue. We haven't put this out for competition since 2016, so it was time we did. So two companies respond. One company offers Jefferson Parish $11,000 in revenue per month. The other offers almost $21,000 in revenue a month. So when it comes to me to make a selection, I was given the instruction that I could only choose the company offering less money, $11,000. That didn't make any sense to me. So I sent it back to the parish attorney and said, will you look at this and make sure this is correct? Because I don't understand why the company giving us more money wouldn't have gotten the higher score. Sure enough, the parish attorney looked at it, admitted that there had been a mistake in the scoring, and that the company that offered us more money should have gotten a perfect 100 score on the cost proposal, and they had not. They'd been given a low score, so low it knocked them out of the process. So that was my
first red flag. Okay, so let's stop right there. You believe at that point in time that there was a problem going on here, that the fix was in?
No, I didn't at that time. I thought maybe it was a mistake.
So how do you characterize it? You say maybe it was a mistake. I just want to point out your stepson.
I thought it was a mistake
Your stepson made the same mistake. He's a fine lawyer. I know him to be a quality individual. He made the same mistake that his fellow committee members made, and he is a representative of the Budget and Finance Office of the Jefferson Parish Council.
So at that point, there's no issue.
The parish attorney admits that there was a mistake, corrects it, rescores it, and then what happens?
That's where we all selected Fuel. The entire council selected the company that offered us the most money for taxpayers. So up to that point, there was just a mistake in a scoring. So then it goes to contracting. And normally what happens in contracting is whatever we said publicly we were asking for, that gets put on paper and moves forward for contract ratification. That's not what happened here. All of a sudden,
well, what did
in the proposed
but no,
contract,
no, 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 no. What did the RFP?
Because this is really
no, but
important.
What did, no, what's important is what the RFP said, not what y'all said in the council meeting, because what is advertised is what you are legally bound to in the evaluation of the bid. So what did the bid document actually What did the bid document actually provide for that you say they acted contrary to?
So the bid document did not specify how many of our larger buses could be wrapped, and that was not in there. So you can't at
So what do you mean larger? What do you mean larger? Yeah. Larger buses. So what do you mean?
We have several different kinds of buses in our fleet. We have small paratransit buses. We have larger, like 40-foot buses. As it comes to the 40-foot buses, where we can get the most money for the ads, it did not say, it didn't speak definitively to wrapping those buses and making money. And we do have those buses wrapped right now out on the street. So it didn't say anything about that not being allowed. But here's what happens. When the company gets the contract, it says you're only going to be able to put those most lucrative ads on 12 of the big buses, 25%. That was not in our RFP, Newell, and you're right. So where is this restriction tying the company's hands to using only 12 buses for our most lucrative ads coming from when it wasn't in the RFP? And then add to
the administration and others say that that's the industry average.
About
25% of the fleet is typically what's wrapped.
I have heard otherwise, but you're correct. We have to go back to the RFP, and it's not in there. So now you've got a contract with a restriction that
When it's not in there, it can be negotiated, and you can negotiate from that point forward. So it's not as though that in and of itself was a poison pill. So what you have alleged is that there's no one individual that can accomplish what you are alleging here. And I heard you say on Tommy yesterday, you're not attacking your peers or any of the members of the administration as being corrupt or dirty or otherwise. Correct. You're attacking the process. But the process is an inanimate object. And the only way that the process works is by the people. So you are alleging that there is a conspiracy amongst a number of folks to create this scenario that you're articulating. So who are these people?
Let me give you one more example, because this is another thing I suspected. Once we then heard that maybe they're at an impasse because the company was hesitant to sign this deal with this restriction, I suspected there would be a new RFP. And you know very well as a lawyer, if we put out a new RFP, then we certainly are bound not to exclude anyone unfairly by crafting the new RFP to exclude competition. And you know what I got the night before the council meeting? A new RFP drafted to kick fuel out of any future response to an RFP. Does that sound right?
And that was actually articulated how?
From the administration. In writing.
In the RFQ itself. And for what grounds?
In the new proposed RFP, it said it upped the years of experience beyond those that Fuel has, and it put in other criteria that I asked on the record, the company offering us more money, the head was at our meeting, I said, would this RFP, if we move forward and put this new RFP out, would you be able to respond? And she said no. And that's illegal. We cannot craft a public solicitation to exclude companies and to drive a particular result. And that's what I contacted the AG about, because we're on illegal ground if we are crafting an RFP to get a certain result. So it was no one thing, and that's why I can't point the finger at any one individual and have never. But I damn sure am concerned about this process when now we have a contract with the company offering us less money.
So your inquiry went to the administration, to the parish attorney about that provision or no?
I spoke to everyone. I put things in writing. I documented it.
And what was the parish attorney's response to your question about the exclusion of Fuel from being able to bid again?
We didn't get there because I asked it on the record in the council meeting Wednesday because that had only come after hours the night before. So she heard the acknowledgement from the company saying, no, ma'am, we would not be able to compete if you put that out. So they then said they had sent a new updated document at 9:15 that morning, which literally, Noel, I read at my desk at the council meeting. So, and you know what? That's why I did not put this on the agenda. So when they say I refused to, it was not fully baked. I did not want to have this discussion in public because I think it looks bad for our parish and our officials. That's why I didn't move it forward. And my colleagues, unfortunately, and I've told them I'm disappointed in this, moved it forward without me. And I didn't think that served any of us well because this should have been continued discussion behind the scenes, respectfully with our lawyers who are fabulous and respectfully with the company offering to do business here and give us nearly 81% more revenue.
But in the end, you decided and ultimately those documents were corrected. I mean, you know, I guess part of my problem in even conducting this interview, Jennifer, is that I've gone through this process with the parish. I know all of the checks and the balances. I've been involved where there were mistakes made. My own office used to do the same thing, and we would make mistakes, and we would go correct it. What's extremely out of the ordinary here is that we would just go to shock and awe and start encouraging community groups and others and going to the AG without having a collective meeting and remediating anything or any potential. And it seems as though the document was corrected, the observations were made, the documents were corrected, and the appropriate remediation was articulated to the council on the day of the council. And, you know, I've been down that path. Many times.
Yeah. What I will say,
and actually, I've been in a controversy with you as a council member before over a procurement process when I was sheriff. And, you know, the reality is that you work these things out before you go scorched earth out there making, making an allegation that things are rotten and that people are corrupt and this and that, and
so,
you know, and the fact of the matter is, and let me finish, and then come back saying,
yeah.
No, I'm talking about the process. Well, no, you're talking about a conspiracy because the process doesn't work without a group of individuals involved in this. And I doubt very seriously, knowing your son-in-law, who represents the body that you sit on, that he would participate in that. I don't think so. I don't even know who else is on the committee, but I know him.
I know
that he wouldn't stand idly by and allow any of that to occur.
I
just
agree
as an
with
observation.
You 100% on everything you have just said. And so let me say what the quote in the paper said was that I believed my council colleagues had gotten bad information. I did not say ever there was a conspiracy. That's a word you've used because I think it basically is just either sloppiness and loose ends and people just not being strictly adherent to our process that's left us off road. That's different than like an intentional conspiracy. I think some of this was just handled poorly, but it's leading us to a really poor result and a company that's probably never going to want to do business in our parish again. And let me say this because this is important. I met with each of my colleagues and our parish president in private, individually, to express my concerns this week and did that legwork. It was when I wasn't feeling like anyone else was concerned that I raised it to the AG. Because if we had put out an illegal RFP, which likely could have happened Wednesday, that's where I thought the parish would be really in trouble.
Well, I know for a fact, Jennifer, that you have had issues with previous RFPs that you didn't think were appropriately handled, and I didn't recall you going with the scorched earth approach on this.
I don't recall that.
And work it out internally. I mean, I
tried.
I'm looking at a letter that you sent to the River Region Republican Women. Where,
yes.
You know, you're saying this deal is rotten, this deal stinks, this deal's this, this deal's that.
And do you think you that's the, fair, you, given what I just said?
You make the comment. No, I don't, because I know that in order for this to be accomplished, it's going to require the meeting of the minds of multitudes of people to be able to get to where this is, and I just don't see that happening.
Or just
not to belabor the point, but I said it once. I know your son-in-law is a quality lawyer. Your stepson, he's a quality lawyer, and he's on that committee. I don't see that happening. The council has representation on that committee. And the committee is the one.
Please don't say, though, that I'm alleging a meeting of the minds. I'm saying this process was so shabby, so mishandled, that the result was obviously going to be the bad one we got. I am not alleging conspiracy. I am not alleging a meeting of the minds. I'm alleging an RFP that was sloppy from the beginning, that didn't have information, that then got allegedly tried to get fixed by inserting stuff out of midair into a contract that someone was hesitant to sign. That leads to an alleged impasse, and then that's the grounds they need to go back to the original vendor we had. I'm strictly saying this process was messy.
Jennifer, you can characterize it all you want, okay? And I'm just going to be honest with you. When you start out, Republican women, when the fix is in, we, the taxpayers, pay the price. That is not a connotation of sloppiness. That is an intentional act. When the fix is in, requires intentionality. Maybe you didn't wordsmith. Maybe you didn't work. When the fix is in, you don't think it requires intentionality?
This process drove a result that didn't serve our taxpayers well, because now we have a company that hasn't given us more money since 2016, and we ran away a company offering 81% more revenue. I think something's wrong with that process, respectfully.
Well, the process is the one that brought it up, right? And to rebid it, and what you're saying is this goes all the way back to 2016, that it wasn't.
I'm just saying, at this point, when we publicly put it out for competition and a new competitor came in, it seems like all of these mistakes ran off a good competitor. I don't know how to account for that fairly. I do not know how to account for that. But I know there's a problem with the process, and it's our jobs together to put our feelings aside and really focus on what went wrong here so this doesn't happen again. Because we've all lost revenue for a transit department that's going to hit a fiscal cliff. We need to set aside our feelings and work on fixing this process so that it is more fine-tuned for our future.
And you think a mistake or sloppiness is analogous to the fixes in, is what you're saying?
I think I was saying my antenna are up and we're going to get a bad result, and we did.
Okay. All righty. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. Appreciate your time and your insight, as always.
I very much appreciate your time as well.
Jennifer Van Ranken, Jefferson Parish Councilwoman at Large. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.